you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I'm Parker Omain.
I'm George Chen.
And you're listening to Sup Doc,
where we talk to our interesting friends from the entertainment world who share their favorite documentaries and how they connect with them.
We're discussing only music docs all month long. It's our October series, and we're kicking it off with a classic of the genre.
On today's episode, we're talking about the incredible 2005 documentary The Devil and Daniel Johnston with musician Kip Yulhorn.
Kip records music as Cloudland Canyon and has released music with the bands Red Scare and Panthers, and he loves this documentary.
Daniel Johnston gained fame in the 90s for his artwork, music, and by urban legend as a schizophrenic, manic, depressive genius. Director Jeff Fierzig's documentary delves into all the messiness surrounding the man and his art. The AV Club called it the most harrowing and aesthetically keen portrait of madness and artistic inspiration since Crumb.
Daniel Johnston is currently on his final tour, so catch him in your town if you can. And now, here's Kip.
Kip Yulhorn, welcome back to your own home, where we've invaded, where we did not know that there was a child care situation also happening at the same time.
Right.
But that's, hey, you know, that's the kind of podcasting you get, indie, DIY podcast.
That's what Sup Doc is all about.
Yeah, real DIY. And
Let me just jump in.
Okay, Paco's jumping in.
No idea how you guys know each other.
Let's break it down.
Let's break this down.
That's probably pretty
interesting. Let's get deep with this stuff.
Actually. It could be interesting.
You're obviously a musician, Kip.
Some degree.
This because your living room's full of guitars. What is that, a Telecaster over there?
Jazzmaster.
Nice record collection I'm looking at.
Yeah.
So what's your background on music?
Let's see. Actually, you know what? It'd be better to just start with how George and I know each other. I think.
Yeah.
So,
what was it? Red Scare, or was there a band before that?
No. Okay. That was pretty. Yeah. So I knew you through John Asher somehow.
That's your bandmate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys knew each other, and then
I know why. That's through Sonny K, through Bottleneck.
Okay, makes sense.
Because he was his label.
And you used to live with, or at Punks with Presses?
I worked for Sonny briefly. I kind of would work maybe a shift, like an afternoon, and just get some cash and some records. Yeah.
In Berkeley?
In Berkeley. Berkeley
Ocean
Border.
No, but I...
Band, you were based out of Memphis?
No, out of Knoxville.
Knoxville.
Actually, okay. Wow.
Pilot Light? Is that Knoxville?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know Regina.
Really,
yeah. Well, you know Regina also.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, that's where I'm going.
Knoxville, the Pilot Light?
Yeah.
Is it really? Killer Bees is playing the Pilot Light?
It's separate. So I'm going to Nashville with Killer, and then I'm going to stay with a friend in Knoxville, and she's like, I want to take you to this place called the Pilot Light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
It's a venue that mutual friend of ours used to run.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Awesome. And so it's a music venue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool.
For the most part, I'm assuming they do other stuff. Actually, I think we played the last Red Scare show at CMJ. When you lived in New York.
Oh, okay.
But
so
the second to last was at the Pilot Light. It's been open forever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But George and I think I probably met you the first time when you set up that crazy show.
Yeah, we set up this. I set up a really crazy show, 17 years ago. So that's
awesome.
Definitely older than your child.
Yeah, that's right.
Pre your child.
The Cocodrie. Yeah, because you were on tour with...
The Cocodrie's in Seattle.
No, that's the Crocodile. You're thinking the Crocodile. Cocodrie was in North Beach, San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff.
Across the street from the Lusty Lady.
Okay.
Which I only know because of John Asher.
Okay. Yeah. He's frequented the Lusty Lady.
I don't know if I should be saying that.
Sure.
Anyway, just...
Hey, you know what? He's not here. Let's just...
If you want to spend your whole per diem on the Lusty Lady, have you been in this place before?
No.
Wait, we gave you a per diem? I didn't. You guys didn't have an agent.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
Leslie Lady was always sweaty and weird and
smelly. I went there with a bunch of comics on closing night because they just were like, "I'm like, people are like, we got to go." Like Nate O'Green is like, "We're all going to Leslie Lady right now if you want to go along."
He's,
which is not. He's like, "It's actually progressive to go." Okay, if it's progressive to go, then I'll go. It's somehow helping the union cause.
That's
by going.
An excuse I always use.
You're going to a strip club in a postmodern fashion.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
There you go.
So that's we met maybe through John on a separate trip, but then like we saw a crazy show. It was like Lightning Bolt.
This is probably the first time Lightning Bolt was in San Francisco.
You know what? Actually, it was crazy. I booked like, I think it was like a string of shows. Like they had come down. They had toured once where no one knew who they were, and they played in like Sacramento in a parking lot to like five people. Mm. And then like, then there was a thing where they maybe kind of broke up for a minute. I don't know if you know this back in the day. And then they came there again. And I had been in touch with Ben, I guess, McOscar. And then I just was like, oh, you guys are coming. Let me get you a show like every night. So there was like a 5-night. They did like a Bay Area tour where they played like the Cocotree twice and then played like San Jose, Sacramento, Oakland, like all over the place.
I bet Eraserada was involved.
I don't think they were really a band at that point.
Interesting.
But this is getting deep in the weeds. Okay. But yeah, Eraserada. Yeah. Like we know each other through this band, punk band, punk scene stuff.
Also, you should. I mean, the show that you set up is pretty crazy. Lightning Ball, Lightning Bolt, Shake Shake Shake.
Yeah.
Orchid.
Yeah, you were on tour with Orchid as well. Yeah. And then you formed a band later with the band.
Right.
Band,
people
your
from
bandmates
Orchid.
From Orchid. Yeah. And we're just talking about Jeff Garlock's podcast.
Right.
Yeah, and how he has sponsors. If he's listening, give us your old equipment, Jeff. If you stop podcasting, mail it out to Kip.
Awesome.
And then you now do Cloudland Canyon,
right?
And have you been DJing, or is that? Am I making that up?
Not
here.
Super frequently. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How is LA treating you?
Great.
I think we moved here around the same year.
You moved here.
I moved
like
about
6
a year
months
ago.
Earlier.
Yeah. Okay. So we both are newcomers to this area.
How are you liking LA, George?
You know, I love waiting in line at Squirrel down the street, buying the Squirrel Jam.
Yeah.
Squirrel Jam? God damn it. Is that a pun that I didn't mean to make?
I think you actually you should probably copyright that.
I've seen Squirrel Jam in stores. So, yeah.
I just realized that. That me complaining about or thinking that the line at Squirrel was hilarious was not, it's really not too dissimilar from waiting in line at Bonds.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say like just being in San Francisco anywhere.
True.
Probably there's always lines.
Pretty much the same.
People don't work apparently in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Welcome to LA. Like, I'm like, who is in every cafe right now?
Yeah.
Working on their screenplays.
Lots of screenplays. Speaking of films.
And to get it back on track.
We're here. To discuss one of my all-time favorite documentaries. I'm so happy that you picked this. I've been waiting for someone to pick The Devil and Daniel Johnston forever.
Yeah.
I love this documentary.
Didn't you guys did the other movie, right?
The other Daniel Johnston?
No. The other, the same director, right?
We have not done either of Jeff Furzig's other movies.
I thought he did J.T. Leroy.
Well, we did. Okay, there's two movies about J.T. Leroy. Yeah. That's where you maybe got... There is a movie that is very critical of Laura Albert that we talked to the director.
The Cult of J.T.
Marjorie
Right.
Yeah.
Furzig's movie, that came out maybe 2.5 years ago. This movie, Jeff Furzig's movie about Laura Albert came out a year ago.
Yeah.
And is not on, I guess it's on HBO.
It could still be. Yeah. It's all right. It's pretty good.
Having seen this movie, it makes me kind of reevaluate my feelings about Laura Albert a little bit, having seen author J.T. Leroy. And possibly we're going to, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll cut this out if it doesn't happen.
Mm.
We might be able to get to talk to Jeff Furzig.
That would be amazing.
But, you know, this show is always about, like, and you're kind of like a first example of, like, a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Right.
Listener, long-time listener of this show.
Yeah.
And you're like, I want to do Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah.
Why did you pick that?
God.
You're in the hot seat.
One question. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you also know other people that make documentaries.
Right, true. Yeah. True. My, I don't know if there's any tie in there, but I don't know. I mean, let's dissect it. It's got mental illness.
Yeah.
That's usually fascinating to some, or terrifying.
Both.
His songs are great. Some feel better done by other people. I don't know.
Yeah.
Polarizing. Now he's got an art career.
Yeah. I loved his art.
He's got a multi-layered career.
I learned insanity. A lot. I learned a lot from this thing.
Did you rewatch it?
This is my first time.
He had never seen it.
It was actually my first time watching this.
I was so excited for you to watch this.
Yeah, and it's longer than I thought it was going to be, but like there's so much happens.
It's incredible.
And actually, I will say, like, watching the half Japanese documentary is like a very pivotal experience I had in the 90s at the old UC Theater in Berkeley, because they screened it and then half Japanese played.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, Jad Fair was in the audience. And
oh, cool.
They played.
And he, okay.
Jeff Herzig directed both.
Right. But I'm okay, Jad Fair, Baltimore?
I guess so. Okay. He's in Austin now, I believe. Okay. But yeah, he was in
Jad
Baltimore.
And David.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was telling these George yesterday that Pete Fair was my bass teacher.
So really?
I grew up in the same town that the Fairs grew up in.
Oh, okay.
In Michigan, before they moved to Maryland.
Okay.
They were in Coldwater, Michigan, where it's my hometown, which is this weird music scene in this tiny little town.
Is it? Oh, really?
It's a farm town. Okay. Yeah, it's a town of like 2,000, 3,000 people.
It's not close to anywhere?
No. It's close to the end of nowhere, actually.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's cool, though.
But yeah, there's something in the water in Coldwater. So there's a lot of music, tons of musicians, and the Fairs live there, and Pete Fair was my bass teacher.
That's funny because, like, the one line I always love from that movie is just about, like, bass strings, there's less of them.
Yeah.
The fat ones make the lower sounds.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd seen that movie since 2006. The, apparently when it came out.
The Devil in the Dance,
right. And I rewatched it just now, actually.
Yeah,
it's so good.
It's so well done, and it's such a fascinating story. We sometimes do a game on the show where we try to cast people if there was a biopic version.
Okay.
And I've got my pick.
Oh,
Paco, do you have an idea?
Whoa, of who would play Daniel Johnston?
Yeah, who would play Daniel Johnston?
Oh.
Young Daniel Johnston.
I hate that you had time to think about this.
Well, no, I watched it.
You're in the hot seat. We need sound effects for this. A toilet flush.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a hot seat. Hot seat.
Okay, I'll just throw mine out.
All right.
Okay.
Michael Cera.
Oh,
Young for sure.
Young.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen Young Daniel Johnston.
Oh. How are you going to make Michael Cera that?
Well, I mean, we just do that, period. It's going to be like that Brian Wilson with Paul Dano and John Cusack.
I love that movie. But seriously, that is the weirdest. Like that
Love and Mercy? I did not buy that.
The transition is so...
No, it's horrible.
Like, it kind of kills it.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
You saw it. I mean, Paul Dano put in work to look like Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
John Cusack put in no work.
Yeah.
What is that about?
Yeah.
It's a choice. It's a choice.
Right.
And I was like, you know who should play Brian Wilson? I keep saying this, Brian Wilson. Who could have played old Brian Wilson? Greg Kinnear.
Oh,
huh?
Do you see it? And he's got the acting chops.
He's got
the acting chops.
He does.
I know.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Hollywood, listen.
Yeah, I need to do some.
Please, George. I need work. Please be a casting director.
Yeah, I'll cast Paco in. He can play any number of voiceover people.
I think if Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Uh huh.
If he had lived, older, Daniel Johnston.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And
he could do it.
And there's so many people that could play his weaselly manager. And
I think Michael Cera is pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good for you. Yeah.
And also, our friend DJ Real, possibly.
Oh. Yeah.
When I was watching this, I'm like, this guy reminds me of DJ Real, Next Star U.
Interesting.
So, you know.
Maybe John Cusack could just play
all of them. He could play all of them.
Yeah.
They should make this into a movie, actually. I mean, the story is incredible, which makes it such a great fucking documentary.
Yeah.
Because great documentaries have twists and turns and pathos, and you're, like, excited for people. Then you're like, this guy's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And you're like, I hope he wins.
Is that what you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean.
Sorry.
No, that's just kind of what I've been kicking around. How much accountability you can have for someone who's mentally ill. Or how much
manic depression.
How much you can expect from someone. Who's mentally ill.
I mean, I've been around some mentally fucking ill people, and I got to know them pretty well, and I know I was being manipulated on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, there's purposeful manipulation, and then there's just, like, you're sick. Mm. But I've been around mentally ill people where I'm like, fuck you. Yeah, I know you've got problems, but that was a shitty thing to
do. No. And I remember the thing that freaked me out the most about the crash.
Mm-hmm, the plane crash?
Is that I had forgotten that not only did he ditch the keys.
Yeah, dude.
To use the new military lexicon.
Oh, good job.
I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
But he also took control of the plane.
Yeah.
Daniel did. Yeah, that's right.
That's insane.
He was trying to...
Well, I guess that's...
Well, he...
There, yeah.
He was wrestling it from his dad.
I want to pin down a thing you said, Paco. You referred to his manager as Weasley.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Jeff Tarkovsky, the guy who was running his publishing and doing the cassettes for him?
Yes.
You thought he was... I didn't think he was Weasley.
So I did, because there's a couple points in that movie when he got him out of the mental hospital early.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, to benefit your fucking bottom line. And then he was like, and near the end, he was like, I've worked 30 years on this.
Yeah.
I wanted him to sign this record deal with Elektra because I've been working 30 years on this. It wasn't because Daniel Johnson deserves, it wasn't because he's worked so hard, it wasn't because we need to make mental illness something that everyone can understand, that these people aren't pariahs. It was like, I've worked 30 years on
this. Well, also, that was the better deal anyway. I mean, Terry Tolkien,
I
think is the one that
the Elektra
signed,
guy?
I think he signed Luna to...
Atlantic? Was it Atlantic?
Elektra.
Elektra, okay.
But they said that that contract for Daniel Johnson was super slanted heavily towards
Daniel Johnson. Yeah.
And he'd been, I mean, at that point, how long had he been with him? Like 10 years?
Yeah.
He kind of feel like he had the right to just be like, this is the thing that you know.
And honestly, selling almost 6,000 CDs, pretty good. I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, in 1996 or whatever.
Yeah. Is that when it was?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Around 95.
So it took, basically it took almost 10 years for the second, that was the second record, more or less?
Well, I guess...
More or less.
Proper record?
Yeah.
I've seen those cassettes around, right?
Yeah.
And then seeing that Tarkovsky was, like, putting those out constantly, I'm like, oh, these aren't, like, from the 80s. These are, like, from circa to mid-2000s.
Right. Well, he's sitting at a desk in his kitchen full of them, you know, and he's got the little glue gun thing, like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dealing with those shitty plastic shells, those cassette shells are the worst. But I have some sympathy towards him. I feel like he is such, like, obviously a true believer in Daniel.
Yeah.
As many people around Daniel are. And, like, I think it's Kathy McCarthy who says... He's like Broadway Danny Rose.
Right.
Which is like an empathetic character. And like, I sometimes feel like Broadway Danny Rose in a lot of my life.
I could see that.
I could
see
that. Like sort of a nebbishy, like just like, believing in someone else's art. Clearly there's a period where he hasn't been talking to Daniel. He's still like going to the comic shop and buying Daniel's art. Like they don't seem to be like talking. And he's like, and it's true. He is like also licensing. Like he's like, oh, I'm lending my art out to these institutions to do art shows. But I don't think in this would have been like 92, 93, that he was cashing in on Daniel.
Well, a counterpoint to that.
Okay.
Just he probably I'm guessing obviously that he I mean if he felt fired in a way that wasn't exactly the most ethical, I'm sure he felt at that point justified, but there's Malcolm Gladwell has a term for that. I'll think of it later.
Outlier
licensing
seeing the dog
licensing consent
okay.
Where it's like you kind of feel entitled to something on the back end.
Oh, right.
Because of all the front, all the sweat work. Equity he put into
Exactly.
Daniel's career. And I'm not saying the guy's 100% weasel. I mean, everyone is multifaceted. Like, obviously, the guy loved him. And if nothing else, this story documents how there's very few people in Daniel Johnson's life he could depend upon.
Yeah.
And this guy was one of them. And his parents were the other ones. You know?
You feel like he couldn't rely on his parents?
No, he could. Oh, there were three people in this doc he could rely on.
Okay.
That dude and his two parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that had his back, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's lucky he had his parents. In the end, you're like, fuck, I'm glad that they stuck by you.
Well, that's what's interesting, I think, when we get to the end. Is like, sort of like, I wonder what's been going on since then. But if we go chronologically, like, I had not seen any of those films that he had made when
he was
a teenager.
Right. Yeah.
Or like even younger.
Even younger.
He was doing stuff with like stop motion
and
editing.
And he was good at it.
He was very, those are good films.
Yeah. Could you imagine if he'd gone to like film school?
Yeah, like you've gone to like, I guess, well, you live in West Virginia. I don't know what the closest would have been.
Hearing that someone lives there is kind of scary.
In West Virginia?
Yeah.
Just alone?
I know people from there.
Just that fact.
I got
fact
a friend from there, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was a Texas kid all through.
I kind of had forgotten that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, knowing, I feel like I knew a lot about Daniel Johnston before seeing this, and then I realized there was so much I didn't know. I just thought he was always Texas-based.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought he was fat. Mm-hmm. I always thought that he, you know, I didn't realize kind of like the progression. There's a lot of questions to go into, but so
it's easy to forget probably that he was a good looking dude.
Yeah,
in the day.
Yeah, like Michael Cera.
Yeah, he did have like Michael Cera.
He's
of Arrested
charming
Development,
as a kinda. Kid. He was like a
super charming.
He's super obviously super charismatic. Kind of like a ringleader around his, like one of his friends from high school is still a good friend of his and is like in the documentary.
Right, right.
So,
and he's got the best things to say.
Are
I
they
think.
Still friends?
Seems like there might be some tension.
Okay.
But I think it seems that way.
Yeah.
I mean, circa this, you know, this also, I was thinking about, I was looking at when the Half Japanese doc came out, which is, I gotta say, like 94, 95. This didn't come out till 2006, like I could easily see spending a decade just going through all his cassettes, his art archives, like just getting all the backstory, like getting the audio tape of like Lee Ranaldo, like trying to talk to him in New York and trying to get him to like go back home when he's just like, I gotta go, I'm famous. So much, I think maybe him being close to the Fairs. He had that footage from when this is a great record. The record that Jad Fair and Daniel Johnston made together is so fucking sad.
Yeah, it's super
and,
sad.
And like beautiful.
Yeah.
So, and I remember
I had that same thought. I mean, I'm not trying to cut you off, but like when you showed up, that song, I think it's Some Things Last a Long Time. Was on, and that song is so beautiful
and but sad.
Yeah,
that's how I feel when George shows up at any time. Mostly just sad.
Do you guys all have
a lot of anticipation and then just sad disappointment? Just sad.
Do you guys have memory of first hearing Daniel Johnston's music or voice anywhere?
Yes.
Do you have a memory? Yeah,
because my brother was a big Daniel Johnston fan when I was in high school because he was ordering those How Are You cassettes off of Rolling Stone. You could get them in the back of Rolling Stone magazine. You could. For like $3 or $5 or something, you could send a money order, and that dude would. And my brother had a T-shirt, and he had the cassettes.
Oh wow, he had the shirt and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's so a really, good way to sell those.
Yeah,
back in that. Yeah.
How about you, Kip? Did you have a memory of first hearing his music ever?
Well, you know, okay, so Sonic Boom, Pete Kimber, who
Spaceman?
I did the last, I did the last Cloudland record with. Mm-hmm. He, well, I don't know why, but he and Jason, also of Spaceman 3, have both covered multiple Daniel Johnston songs. Also, if you look through iTunes, if you search for one of his songs, I don't have like an impressionistic memory of it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I can't even remember when probably when they did that comp late 2000s.
Oh, who did the comp? The Spaceman guys?
No. There's just a comp, and like TV on the Radio was on it. A ton of people. Grizzly Bear, I think.
Right.
And it was like the first, well, at least to my knowledge, the same time around like when Arthur Russell was kind of being revived a little bit.
Yeah, early 2000s.
People put together like a new, I'm sure there was one before, but tribute to
Daniel Johnston.
Yeah.
Didn't Kathy McCarthy put together a comp album?
I guess she covered it.
That could have been it too.
Yeah, she did an entire album of covers of like stuff that she liked from his early cassettes that she felt like didn't get a proper version done.
Oh, so this was just her like her kind of her mixtape of her faves.
Yeah, but with like faves. I listened to it this morning actually. It's on YouTube and it's really well done. I liked it a lot.
Hello. 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 I am the ghost of Daniel Johnston. Many years ago, I lived in Austin, Texas, and I worked at McDonald's. It is an honor and a privilege to speak to you today. To tell you about my condition and the other world.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you were to pick a cover by one of those guys of a Daniel Johnston song, which one would you go for?
Probably the spiritualized cover of True Love Will Find You in the End. Cool. I think it's like a live iTunes thing okay. that I heard the other day.
Let's drop 15 seconds of that in there or something like that. And that was amazing. I was going to say, I think either the first thing I heard was Speedy Motorcycle with Yola Tango, where he's calling it in, which I think was like maybe like a radio promo or something in the early 90s.
Okay.
And then there is also, I remember just like hearing a bunch of like a special on college radio and
yeah.
just like, and being like, who's this weird woman singing
yeah.
right now with this really weird piano? And it turned out it was Daniel Johnston.
And the puzzle right. organ.
All live recordings and stuff.
Right.
So, yeah.
Without college radio, we wouldn't know about so many musicians.
Don't you miss that?
Of course I do. I still listen to The Current, which is out of Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and Wider, which is out of my hometown, mm-hmm. where I went to school, because mm-hmm. I love college radio so much.
Dublab is kind of from here. Mm-hmm. Similar vibe.
Oh, cool.
A little bit.
Yeah. K Chung also.
Yeah.
Yeah. But KXLU I listen to in the car
oh,
sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, which is really
Pepperdine?
Good programming. It's Loyola Marymount.
Okay.
So shout out to 88.9 KXLU.
Yeah.
International Voice of Reason.
Well, we had KUSF for a long time
right.
in San Francisco.
Got lost. Yeah.
One of the best college radio stations in the world.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff in here is like really specific to like there's a lot of specific 80s 90s stuff, like pre-internet, like
yeah,
Matt fanzine culture
yeah.
kind of stuff, but they kind of like, I guess, how do we want to approach the rest of this? Because we could go chronologically. There's so much that happens. So we, but I was going to say, like, I didn't know about him being on MTV or anything.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never knew that
okay,
story.
That's actually, it's funny you say that, because that's one thing that I thought was really interesting. Because he's kind of, you know, he's not doing that well mentally, but then he's able to just totally pull it together enough to just completely, I mean, he knows what he's doing.
That's exactly
and
right.
that
he's a manipulator.
Okay, yeah. Well, fair.
That's
yeah.
that's your vibe on it.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that
well,
yeah.
part. Mm-hmm. There's many facets, obviously, mm-hmm. to this guy. I mean,
and I can't tell honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of like you're supposed you. I want to believe that he's this naive and he's just like this savant.
Mm.
And but then there's a thing of like, oh, he wasn't booked on this MTV thing.
No.
He came to the barbecue.
Yeah.
But the force of the whirlwind personality, forcefulness right. of that young Daniel Johnston, I guess,
yeah.
just got him there.
And there's something that I think also of like it's kind of like the guys in the back like elbowing each other, like, let's put the train wreck on stage and see what happens. And then mm-hmm. he goes up and he wows people because he has natural talent. And I think there's
yeah.
that element too where they're like, well, let's put the crazy guy yeah. up and see what happens.
There's two things that I was thinking of. Actually, there's one thing I was thinking of while watching this, which you and I talked about, which is Crumb.
Yes.
Have you seen Crumb?
I actually haven't, no. I know what it
is. There is kind of like similar themes about like celebrity yeah. and artistic genius mm-hmm. and like mental illness.
Yeah.
And then also this movie, Frank, mm-hmm. that was written.
Yeah. What did you think about that?
I really liked Frank.
Okay.
It felt the
I
most
did
to me like being okay. in a band that I've... And it's John Ronson did
okay.
the script for that.
Frank, okay. I thought Frank was amazing.
And yeah, like and a lot of what goes on Frank is, I think, based partly on Daniel Johnston, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think he was referencing.
And it's like involves a trip to South by Southwest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in Crumb, let's just explore that for just a second, because in Crumb they talk about because Robert Crumb obviously is in San Francisco mm-hmm. and he's a great artist, but
right.
he takes acid and like it kind of changes his life.
Yeah.
But there's also his brother Charles, mm-hmm. who Robert Crumb says is the like catalyst to his artistic abilities, because Charles was really the talent of the family.
Okay.
He's a complete genius, but he lives at his parents' house. He's disheveled and he's also insane.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's like that line between genius and mental illness is.
I'm so tired of that. Yeah. I'm so sick of it.
what are you saying? Like people sort of fetishizing mental illness?
Yeah, yeah, fetishizing.
Okay, let's talk about that more. Yeah. That is a big
fetishizing thing, the narrative of a shattered genius.
Yeah.
Just get it out of here.
Yeah.
And not every band has to make a Sgt. Pepper either. There's, yeah. you know, you don't have, there. All of, I feel like everything has an arc that's predictable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure, yeah, he's probably mentally ill. That's
yeah.
fine. But, yeah, that people hold on to that for romantic reasons, I yeah. feel like.
Well, I think this breaks that down a bit more. Like, yeah. Like things like, I'm going to go back to Kathy McCarty. She has a really good voice in all of this. She's like, right. I wanted to believe that he's just this doe-eyed innocent.
Right.
But then the more I got to know him, it's like, you're doing fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that is, like, okay, so like break more down about that, because I feel like that is, you're right, a trope that's
yeah.
not just in documentaries. It's in like, it's more in like fiction stuff, I think.
Yeah. Even.
It's like more in like every like high school kind of torture genius.
And actually, that's the thing I like a lot about the Big Star doc, mm-hmm. really, is that it kind of chooses not to follow the VH1
mm-hmm. Behind the music.
Yeah, because that you realize at a certain point that became the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Rise, drugs. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe
right.
resurrection.
Well, do you think drugs is like, drugs is just comes in at a certain point to be like, it seemed he was on a path and then the drugs seem to like kick it up a notch.
Oh, that's completely believable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if, yeah, mm-hmm. someone, what is he?
Manic depression?
So both. Bipolar, yeah. I don't know. What's is the same thing?
Well, schizophrenia is not manic depression.
No, I mean bipolar and manic depression.
I think that those are similar, yeah.
So, give a bipolar person some acid.
Yeah, not a good idea.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
Who already has this weird religious upbringing.
Yeah.
We didn't get into that yet.
No, let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
For this.
You know who actually talked a lot, strangely, about the devil? Rocky Erickson.
Oh, yeah. A lot of weird. Okay, a lot of also Texas
right,
produces so many weird. Yeah, Jandek,
of
who's not okay. mentally. Jandek is very not mentally.
I don't,
as
yeah.
far as I can tell.
Yeah.
He's a very together dude.
Yeah. A lot of the artists are like running as fast as they can from their Christian upbringing. Mm-hmm. You know, even
yeah.
from Bill Hicks from comedy.
That's interesting.
To
yeah.
to music. You know, like a lot of those guys are running as.
Kinison for sure.
Sam right. Kinison was
that's
a preacher.
The most.
Yeah.
You would not become Sam Kinison if you didn't have that background.
Absolutely,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. They're running as fast as they can with a middle finger up away from that upbringing. So we are introduced to Bill and Mabel Johnston, his mm-hmm. mom and dad, and we find out that he grew up in West Virginia, and his friend, I forget his name, the art friend.
I say David, but I'm, yeah.
He, what I liked is he called them the right-wing Christian Glass family, which I thought was...
So that implies more or less that they are... concerned with academia
and art,
yeah,
but they aren't liberal. They're
that's
like,
a strange combination.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and they show like his sister like playing the bassoon, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. And then,
sorry, did you mean the Glass family, like the Philip Glasses, or like
J.G. Salinger?
Oh, okay,
yeah, the Glasses.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I don't know that. Is that
Franny and Zoe?
I've never read Franny and Zoe. Okay, I feel like cut that out.
I think that the Glass family kind of is a thread through a lot of his writing. There.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, so they show Daniel making home movies, which he's very good at.
Yeah,
and I can't remember if we talked about this on or off.
I think we started on it.
But
yeah.
like some of like oh yeah, we did because we're talking about him going to film school. Like some of the stuff he was making was so clever at mm-hmm. a time when I don't even know if that's. I mean, we're talking probably early 80s, late 70s,
late 70s,
and he's doing stop motion stuff.
Yeah,
and like funny
in camera editing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's really
yeah.
clever stuff.
Do you know? I find this also. Have you guys seen the documentary about Slint?
I have not.
Okay, you should.
About
okay.
what?
But,
this band from Louisville.
Yeah. They're on Touch and Go. They're early 90s.
They're called what?
Slint.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
I think Lance Bangs made it.
Yeah, I remember going to one of the shows they played that they filmed.
At
Great American Music
really?
Hall. Yeah, I don't know if that ends up in the
Reunion shows.
One of the reunion shows, but Lance Bangs was there filming.
Okay.
I remember having to... Anyway, yeah.
Well, I mean, the one of the points that's made about those guys, mm-hmm. particularly the two main people in Slant,
Britt
and Brian, yeah. mm-hmm. I think, is that they were creatively rewarded as children.
Okay, interesting. And, we were talking about child prodigies a lot yesterday, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like Beefheart.
Was he rewarded as a child?
I think so.
Okay.
Like, told...
made to feel special. Right. Validated.
Like,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that.
Yes.
Because then you don't have that hanging over your head as far as, should I be doing this or should I be doing something constructive?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Someone's yeah. basically just taken the yoke off and said...
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, that's a beautiful thing. Points you in the right direction, maybe pay for some piano lessons or yeah. something. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Obviously, Daniel didn't have that.
Well, I mean, he was well, no, maybe he was doing of, it in spite what, of that.
Oh. No, I mean, I kind of feel see. Like he did. In a way. I mean, yeah.
He was validated for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's... I mean, so much is documented. Like, yeah. he just walked around talking into... As far as I can tell, talking into a tape recorder and making films his entire childhood. And they yes. were just like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Imagine sitting through there logging all that audio and footage.
Man, lots
like,
of work.
For like, that took probably a decade.
Well, it seems
work.
Like his mom was kind of sick of it, though. Like, she was...
I can understand yeah, that no, to I a
can,
degree.
I can yeah. as well.
But, like, yeah. also just, like, the thing of, like, yeah, when I was, like, 18, it'd be like, all I wanted to do is, like, draw, make weird recordings, and, you know, walk around town. And, like, of course, then you get that voice of, like, well, that's not what life is like.
Right,
like,
right.
Well, maybe for this dude, that is actually the best life he can have.
Yeah. yeah.
It also makes me think of, okay, this is maybe for, like, he's not in the category of someone who's developmentally disabled, but there's, like, a lot of, like, art centers. Like, I remember in the Bay Area, there's a couple. There's, like, Creativity Explored, mm-hmm. Creative Growth, mm-hmm. and, like, and this comes up later, whether... Daniel should even be considered an outsider artist, or even if that's just like also maybe a really loaded term.
You mean like well, stuff. Is that being similar to folk art?
Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I'm not an art history guy, so I'm not sure. I just feel like they're like it comes up because the gallery that puts him up, they're like he's not an outsider artist. He gets kind of put in as outsider art.
Yeah.
At the end. But
it seems like an unnecessary distinction.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't need to be there. Yeah, but I was just thinking about like how those centers that exist produce some great art by people that otherwise don't have like the infrastructure or like the social ability
right.
to get their art out there, or and it becomes those institutions I think are very good.
Yeah,
they're good institutions to have. And I was thinking about just like that, like if Daniel had that kind of support. But it's also like he's not developmentally disabled.
Well, I mean, part of the thing probably part of the reason he's been able to do everything he did is he mm-hmm. did it by himself.
Yeah,
I mean, he showed up that MTV thing and he knew how to work it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I mean I don't know. That's why the whole thing is so confusing. Also, he basically made his landlord jump out a two-story.
That his landlord or just a stranger? I was so confused about that.
I think it was a stranger.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Because he got off on the bus too soon.
Yeah.
And was lost. And he was going through some garbage cans and this lady yelled at him.
Yeah.
And he ran up the stairs to her apartment to get the demons out of her.
Wow.
Yeah. And maybe we shouldn't approach this chronologically because that's how like the doc is. And we're kind of just jumping to the things that we're seeing. And well, we're assuming,
I'm sorry if I'm sidetracking you guys, but I think...
that's what this podcast is all about.
All 100% sidetracked.
I'm really good at it.
No problem. Go ahead, please.
No, you go ahead.
Well, because to your point, he does go to a state college, an art school.
Yeah, Kent.
Kent State College Art School. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his parents...
Really?
Yeah.
And that's where he met Lori.
Because he went to Abilene Christian Academy and didn't do well. He wouldn't go to class. And so his parents got him into an art school.
I am shocked he did not do well in school.
Right. And then he meets Lori Allen, the love of his life. And who hasn't had the distant love that doesn't know you're even alive? And, you know.
That continued for...
That seems to be a pattern.
Seems like it might still be going
it
on.
It probably
sure.
is, yeah.
That was also a big question. Going back to our... K. McCarthy character.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions.
Well,
there.
Obsession is, I think, part of mm-hmm. have being bipolar and and anxiety and mental health and stuff, like being obsessive about something. Mm-hmm. And he obviously was, and he like apparently, you know, asked her over and over and over again to say, "I love you, Danny," or Danny on a tape, so that he could listen to that and be like, "She does love me." See?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So he could just have that, but he's such an archivist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean,
he is an archivist,
that's validation that. Right. too. I have some experience with bipolar people, mm-hmm. and I was just thinking that the incident after his Austin appearance, when his dad was flying him back to West mm-hmm. Virginia,
yeah,
that. And you're watching his dad cry about it, and you know,
oh, yeah.
and perhaps because it's scary. I'm sure it was terrifying. Because
oh, yeah.
the way he described it, you know, they're going up,
yeah,
down, and all that.
Like, yeah.
And but he was on a manic episode. He was off his meds. He was psyched. He just played this crazy show, and he thinks he can fly.
Yeah,
and it's. I mean, it's not.
Well, he thought he was Casper,
right?
Right, they look at the specific. Well,
yeah,
like
and
Casper
that's
cover.
The tense in which I meant fly, not like actually fly. oh, airport, I see. Just like he, you
yeah,
know,
he can float. He's
imagine
Casper,
or
the
they call it. What do they call it? Magical thinking.
Magical thinking. Yeah,
I've just turned. I figured you guys needed like just an intro into the world of
psychiatry
podcasting.
I don't know much about it. I mean, just like self. Some I'm not self-diagnosing, but
pop psychology. Yeah, I mean,
armchair psychiatrist, the best kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, quarterbacking from the armchair.
The confidence level, I don't know. Sometimes I don't buy how aloof he comes across.
Mm-hmm. Meaning,
I think it. There's just certain situations where you realize he has his wits about him to such an extent that it calls into question. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It calls into question just how crazy is he.
That's exactly. I completely agree. Only because I've spent a lot of time growing up with people with mental illness. Not a lot, but a handful, enough where I've seen them purposely manipulate situations. And maybe that comes from having a mental illness and not knowing how in order to go from step A to B, and then you have to manipulate to get there because they're not sure of how to make those steps.
I feel like you have a specific example in mind.
Well, here's the other thing. Bipolar isn't it's not a hereditary thing. It's a personality disorder. So it's a coping mechanism learned in childhood.
Right. Usually, okay, there you go.
Usually to cope with, you know, a lot of times there's sexual trauma.
Right.
It is. Abuse of some sort.
Right.
So them knowing how to manipulate their way through situations is almost like part and parcel with who they are.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever known an alcoholic, I mean, that they're master manipulators. They're like, I'm fine. Sure. Yeah. And you're like, you're drunk now.
Yeah.
Like, you're hiding a bottle of vodka behind the toilet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not good. Yeah. People don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I've certainly known enough. I mean, shit, you spend any time in the comedy or music world and you'll meet a bunch of alcoholics on your way through there.
Yeah.
But like, and then
I actually thought you were going to say a bunch of manipulators.
That same as. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and there's also the I don't know. Yes, absolutely. People that manipulate, and then people who are alcoholics are then the people I even fear the most are the people who have gone into sobriety.
Yeah.
I know more of those people.
Yeah.
The thing is, I don't want to offend anybody. I
think go ahead.
So with
feel free.
Yeah.
George is right here.
With sobriety,
we have eight listeners.
sobriety, I feel like the thing that would scare me more is to actually know the number of days that I had been sober. Because I feel like it gives it just this huge weight.
True. Okay.
Anyway.
You wouldn't want to have an anniversary date?
No, not really.
Yeah. A lot of those guys know they're to the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think for a lot of people it's triumphant because you're like fucking three years without a drink.
Yeah.
You prefer to think of it as like a continuum.
Like, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, to get back to this doc, for me, my favorite moment in all of this is when he joins the carnival. The middle section of this doc is like the most intense.
Oh.
And it's like, of course he joins the fucking carnival. You know, like it's so apt for.
Okay, is this when he?
He's living with his sister.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Margie.
And just has a mattress on the floor and she doesn't come home.
Gay?
She's I don't know. I have no idea.
She just had a Hawaiian shirt on and a mullet. So I just, but she says he gets to flourish because he's allowed to be messy.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's perfect for somebody that has.
I'm trying to flourish real bad right now. You guys have seen my apartment. Yeah.
yeah. That is really interesting, actually.
It is, yeah. I feel like I've known a lot of really creative, smart people who are fucking slobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because the two don't meet. Like, cleanliness and, like, creativity, for some people, don't work.
Yeah. Man. You know? Yeah. This is like the hoarding thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, really,
this is all the
thing.
Same spectrum of stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it?
Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like the way... Okay. So, the reason by... I know way too much about this. But the way that people would experience taking meth... something like that, the reason that people don't want to take their meds as a bipolar person is because the mania that you get is, this is my understanding anyway, is worth the low that you're going to get. And mm-hmm. so the medicine just levels you out.
Right, right,
so
right.
you're not getting the...
Right.
So, you know, meth heads will go and take a car apart, and then it's just, you know, you get into the middle of projects.
You're productive as fuck if you choose the right area to focus on.
It's odd that you'd say that, because I lived with a meth head, and he would take apart car parts in our living room.
Really?
And then he would spray paint them gold. So he spray painted everything gold, including my entire house.
Wow.
So he would get car engines at flea markets, bring them back to my living room, put newspaper down, and take apart car engines, and then spray paint them all gold.
So is that folk art?
That is folk art. That's folk art, I think. That's fucked art. I don't know if it's folker. Yeah. But so Daniel joins the carnival, which sounds like just made up, but it's so crazy. And he's leaves his sister's house. She has no idea where he's going. He has no way to get a hold of his parents. And he literally joins the fucking circus, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And he's loving working out of the fucking hot dog stand or whatever he's working at.
Right. Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, he takes too long.
His job was?
What's that?
He was the hot dog stand guy?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He was
not running a ride or anything. Yeah.
No, wow. he was selling some of the foods, and
a kid comes in to the booth with him sometimes. So
he said this girl would come in and sing with him and stuff, and she was a carny as well. And then he was taken too long in one of the crappers, and then biker took offense to it and beat him up.
Yeah.
Nothing good has come from any porta potty.
No, especially at a carnival.
Yeah, and then so he just wanders around Austin.
Yes,
and he ends up finding a church.
A church, yeah.
They take him in, they set him up in an apartment.
Now the story is... I just heard the story a few minutes ago. Yeah. But now the story is starting to sound really strange. Carney, straight up to having the church pay for it. Walking through town.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just walking to a church. Yeah. They're like, we'll give you a room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how long do you live there?
Oh, Austin? Or
no,
in
the church.
Setup? Yeah. It seemed like maybe a month or two.
They leased him an apartment.
Yeah.
And then they got him a job at McDonald's.
Okay.
There's also head trauma, right? Like getting punched to the point where you're like, you just wander around, you've lost all your belongings, and like,
his
motorbike and everything, and he's just, you know. So there's multiple like head trauma things that happen.
Yeah.
Like, and then he gets his job at McDonald's, and that's kind of like his foray into like fame and Austin scene.
Yeah.
Is getting
people have to call him at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Like Spin Magazine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that he also, like, he just gravitates to the lowest skill position, like, at all his jobs.
Yeah.
And they say, like, his friends were saying how much he loved that job.
You
know, he'd get to clean tables. And
the manager even kind of liked that he was, like, this local fixture
at
some point, gave him more hours for it.
Yeah. Well, the position with the lowest position has the least responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. Or I guess, depending.
Yeah. You usually do most of the grunt work, but like, you don't have to really decide anything.
Just like cleaning tables.
You can clock out.
You can clock out. You
and
can also
eat all the McDonald's you want.
That is true. Yeah. And then famously MTV comes to.
Well, before that even, there's like the other factor. We're talking about like what it's like pre-internet era.
Yeah.
Like the Austin Chronicle has to cover him. I'm sure like there's probably some college radio thing involved there too. Then like he gets his first live gig through... character who is throughout the film, Kathy McCarty from band Glass Eye.
Yeah.
Who is also in Slacker. I think everyone from Glass Eye is in Slacker.
Yeah.
What is Glass Eye?
That's a band that Kathy McCarty was in.
Okay. But is that a band that went on to do...
They were a cult band in Austin. They're considered kind of like a cult favorite band in Austin. You know, like every town has their... Like they were on Bar None for like a couple records.
Okay.
But they were never a moneymaker. So they're like, they'll do... I just looked it up. They did a reunion in 2012 in South by Southwest. And,
right.
You know, tribute to a friend and stuff. There's like a, you know, San Francisco had a bunch of these too. Like, especially in that same kind of genre.
Yeah.
Like the kind of like alt country genre, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying Glasgow is alt country, but there was like that whole scene in San Francisco for a while where like no one really broke out except for maybe like I'd say like someone like American Music Club is someone who like some people got big in Europe.
That's another. I don't know what to do with that band.
Yeah, like, I mean, that guy. I think I saw that guy around.
Like on your way over.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a guy with a pork pie hat and a beard for sure. But like, yeah, there was like sort of this. They're like a cult band. Mm-hmm. But she, okay. Do you think they? Okay, she says it like we dated, like air quotes dated, mm-hmm. and just like oh Daniel, and he was very repressed and Christian, so nothing ever happened.
Chased.
Were they friends? Did they?
Yeah.
Go on dates? What would
she said that she he?
Let,
yeah.
Air she quotes. Let him yeah, think okay. that they were dating.
Yeah.
And well, then she, well, it's definitely. In Wikipedia yeah. as okay. they were dating.
I was just thinking about that.
Well, the way she says it, it's clearly like we would be like, they're not, they're just friends. But like then it gets put in Wikipedia. Like, so she dated Janet Johnson. Like, I don't know if he really dated at all.
Yeah.
It seems like no. That also is like Crumb. That reminds me of Crumb also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Also, let me, I just am curious. Do either one of you have any idea why after... In his opinion, at least, they were broken up. Why he didn't? I mean, he pursued one romantic relationship his entire life,
right?
Or thus far,
one thing imprinted on him super young. Yeah.
That wow. I mean, that might even say something about the way he was raised.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really and truly, like his parents are still married. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But that's I mean, and for it to not even really be a romantic thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, like he has... Well, he's not... Like, there's his view of sexuality is very weird because there's, like, those drawings of, like, the kind of, like, torsos.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's drawn, like, boners on the character that's kind of his avatar, you know, like the guy with the boxer with his head cut open. So it's, like, he's thinking about this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
You could even say, like, there's a lot of phallic stuff in those, you know, eyeball monsters.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's definitely repressed. I mean, mm-hmm. repressed Christianity, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff.
Did they spend a lot of time talking about how repressed he was, or the family's religion?
Okay,
yeah.
The religious stuff is very much in there.
I feel like somebody told me that his family weren't or his parents weren't psyched about how they were portrayed.
Oh really? Mm.
Because they felt like they handed over like this huge archive of stuff.
Mm.
But honestly, they kind of
out great. I think.
Yeah.
They come out very loving and supportive in the end. That's what I was saying when we first started. I'm like, thank God he had his parents.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they could have just been like, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you're nuts, and you are a horrible person to us. Bye. Yeah, because he obviously wanted to get away from them in the beginning.
Sure.
Like, we all do. Every normal teenager wants to get as far away from their parents as possible. Mm-hmm. But for him, I think also, it was like, you don't even understand who I am and what I do. Like, this is me 100%, this, mm-hmm. you know, artistic person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then MTV comes. Like, he has notoriety, right, in Austin.
Yeah, and, cult favorite.
And he's a cult favorite, he's playing the piano, and he plays the piano really well. Then MTV comes, and then he makes a switch from piano to guitar. And he can't play guitar at all.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean,
okay, I don't think I realized that.
Yeah,
but his piano playing is really great.
Yeah, he's a good piano
playing. It's great. I like his guitar playing, but it's like, yeah, it's like it's not.
He doesn't
super
play
competent.
Chords.
Yeah,
well, but that shit is just honestly like a means to an end.
Yeah, it's the voice. Like the voice is bigger than the guitar, I think.
Yeah.
And what happens though? He's voted best musician.
Right. Full, and he gets like best folk musician in like, the Austin Chronicle or something. And
right.
And people are just. You know, that's just like,
I
someone does like a best comedians in San Francisco, you're not on the list. You're going to be kind of like salty about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. However.
So, are you? I mean, really? I mean, because people, well, I mean, I think it's great.
I don't care.
It's funny. Yeah.
I'm not on anyone's list.
You
it's
hate
fine.
The tenderloin? but I think it's really funny that if people were getting upset that he was, it's always funny when people rely on technical skill is sort of their entry point into anything.
Uh-huh.
Like he doesn't really know what he's doing.
Right.
So he shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Right.
Yeah. Not very pompous.
Well, that's what anybody would say to anyone who wins a best of in anything. They're like, that guy doesn't actually know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy knows what he's doing, you know, and it's like.
But this was a whole, this is like, they just think he's a lunatic.
Right. And he's kind of a sideshow. He's like a carnival freak.
Right, right.
You know, which is why, like, him actually working at the carnival, like, there's a theme throughout this, which is like, he's literally put on in front of people as this kind of freak, but he's so fucking talented and sincere that he keeps winning out because people are like, oh shit. Okay. I mean, that's how I take it.
That's how you view it.
Yeah. I mean, even in New York where they're like, he even got the whole, this crowd of underground genius musicians to sing along with him about a funeral as if it was like, you know, and
Right, you know.
Well, like, that goes back to Jeff Tarkovsky, who we're talking about too. Like, a guy like that did need an intermediary to kind of like be like, okay, you need to get it to these fanzine people. I'm going to send your stuff to Sonic Youth, you know. Someone who's going to like do, just kind of be the mediator for that stuff.
Yeah.
But the fact that he navigated those situations for him, I mean, I'd probably be upset too.
Yeah, he got fired right on the edge of something huge happening.
A gigantic contract. I mean, they show the contract where it's like year one, $35,000.
You don't have to tour.
No, or promote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even promote.
Or you're not obligated to do anything. We're just going to give you money.
And to circle back, this all happens because Cobain has a shirt and wears it in all the interviews.
Yeah.
I think the same thing happened with Flipper, too. Like, okay, Flipper got a deal with Deaf American. I mean, I'm sure Rick Rubin already loved Flipper, but then like Cobain would wear like a Flipper shirt in photos, and then people are just like, what is this, you know? So like, there's so much stuff that actually came through Nirvana, like even people being interested in like the Raincoats or like the Vaselines and stuff like that too. So
Lead Belly, Unplugged,
the Meat Puppets, all these things. But so Daniel Johnston, sort of, it's this funny thing where people are like, people are fans of the shirt.
Yeah.
They want to know more about the shirt.
Yeah.
They want to book the shirt.
Yeah.
And that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, they want to book the shirt. And he's in a mental institution at the time, which is just, it also tells you about.
Oh, he doesn't know who Nirvana is.
No.
Yeah.
He has no idea. And they mentioned earlier, his best friend says, like, he's making these movies. He doesn't know who the Marx Brothers are or Charlie Chaplin.
Right.
Like, he does this.
Melies, yeah.
Yeah, he does this out of just instinct.
Yeah.
And has, you know, nothing to draw upon, you know. And
autodidact.
Yes, exactly. And he's literally in a mental institution while his fame is rising.
Mm-hmm.
But it also tells you about media and popularity and the cult of celebrity.
Okay, well, one thing he did do, just white knuckle did it on his own to solidify his own status, was show up at that MTV.
Yeah.
And then also, I mean, I know I've said that about three times, but then he delivered.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Immediately.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And people, I mean, if you can do, if you can spend your day convincing a ton of journalists that you're the real deal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I mean, I think that he's real for sure.
Yeah.
There's like an authentic thing there.
That's you maybe would actually have to be that crazy.
Yeah.
To be able to deliver after talking about how you're going to deliver for so many hours.
You also have to have that weird sense of confidence and know that you're going to be famous. Like, it's going to happen.
Sure.
And I'm so confident it's going to happen. I'm going to go up on stage and just fuck around and people are going to like it because this is what I do.
Yeah.
In a comic sense, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I do want to talk about the Gibby Hayes interview, which is like so classic.
I keep thinking about that.
It's so funny where they're like,
"Where's that documentary?
Yeah,
where is the Butthole Surfers
documentary?
Okay, no.
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
There's amazing video footage. I've seen good footage of them playing." There's that interview where they're in a bed together. Doing stuff. They like to fucking with people.
Let me ask you something. Before, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but did it ever occur to you how much the Flaming Lips took from
the Butthole Surfers?
Yeah, particularly Wayne.
Everything
from
sort of like they are doing. They like did put the friendly face on it.
They're
the
commercial version.
The Yo Gabba Gabba version of Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, they're the commercial version of the Butthole Surfers.
Not
to
take away something from that. I mean, like, it takes a lot to execute that.
Yeah.
And I credit them that. I mean, Wayne Coyne has, I think, been saying a lot of dumb shit in the media a lot lately. But
yeah. But like, how does that phone call go? It's like, hey, we're doing a documentary on Daniel Johnston. We'd love to interview. Gabby's like, yeah, sure.
This is what I was thinking.
I'm getting my teeth cleaned on Tuesday.
This is the only time I can squeeze you in.
Yeah.
I am so busy.
Yeah.
You'll have to come with me to the dentist.
Yeah.
I feel like that is not true.
That is so funny. I thought every time I see this, I always forget about that. And every time it opens on that scene, I'm like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And then they, because basically.
And that's so unpleasant. It's the most unpleasant interview.
Like, the thing was is that Daniel took acid at a Butthole Surfer show and freaks out. Yeah. And then apparently
hits his manager in the head with the lead pipe.
With a lead pipe.
Yeah.
No.
With a candlestick in the kitchen?
Here's the thing.
He booped him.
He didn't just do acid. Obviously, I don't believe for a second that Gibby, whatever.
Didn't.
What's his last name? Gibby Haynes?
Yeah. Gibby Haynes.
He gave him acid.
Okay. Yeah.
Come on. He's laughing about it while he's
right. Right,
but he didn't just take acid once.
No,
he spent holed up at his apartment for Christmas break.
Yeah, I dropped.
It was weed.
Acid.
Like even the weed seemed like a big transition. For
yeah,
him. Like but, weed seemed to be like a different Daniel, and then you knock it up to LSD. Also, yeah.
But guess what? We'll mess you up for life. LSD.
Yeah.
If you. Yeah.
You have to be pretty grounded.
Well, I mean, 13th floor elevators, another Texas.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What was their big hit?
I don't know if they had a big hit. They had
Rocky Erickson's still around.
Wait, you're gonna miss me. Mm-hmm. I would take acid every show.
Oh, nice.
It's a lot of times to take acid.
Yeah,
I've heard a really bad story about a guy getting dosed, like at a party in Berkeley, mm-hmm. and where like he filled a canteen with what he thought was normal tap water.
Mm.
Then.
Kept drinking it for like a couple days
and
is now and was like a scientist like and now is like a guy who is super paranoid, lives kind of on the street in Berkeley and just but he's like a chess genius. Like he's a guy that would sit in front of a cafe, play chess, won like chess tournaments, did not have a bank account, could not cash the check from the chess thing. That's really sad. It's like he didn't even like consent to that. So he's just like damaged from this like tainted water.
I drove around the country with a guy named Smokadoob that had what he called acid juice in his trunk that we would drink once in a while.
And you drank it too?
Yeah.
How big of a?
It was a gallon milk jug that had a bunch of liquid acid in it, and he would just kept putting orange juice in it. And I guess it had had the same acid in it for a year, and he kept diluting it with orange juice and would just keep drinking.
Interesting way to take drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So you had it with like Tang or something?
It was just concentrated orange juice. I don't know, but he called it his acid juice, and we would stop every once in a while and we'd take a swig of it.
Moved to California?
I met him at a party at my apartment in San Francisco, and he's like, he was like, I'm driving across the country tomorrow. And I was like, can I go with you? And he's like, you got a dog? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I only want someone with a dog. And I was like,
well, that's good that worked out.
Yeah. So he had a German Shepherd and we drove. He was a gigantic. He actually had played for the Detroit Lions. He was a big fucking dude. He was a lineman.
Okay.
So he was this giant guy and everyone called him Smokadoob because that's all he did was smoke doobs.
And drink acid juice.
I didn't think he was going to show up, but sure enough, he showed up at my house at 7 in the morning like, let's go.
Yeah.
And then we're starting to drive and he's like, you like music? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, great, pick a tape. And he had all these cassette tapes only of the fucking Grateful Dead. And I was like, dude, you need to go back. We need to go back to my house.
Let me ask you something. Why would Smokadoob not have only?
Was that?
Why would Smokadoob not have only Grateful Dead bootlegs?
It was all.
I just threw the bootlegs. I don't know.
No, it was probably, he had 200 cassette tapes, all the Dead.
Dick's Picks.
Yes.
Is that what that's called?
I have no
idea. Now it sounded weird coming out of my mouth, but that's the bootleg series.
Dick Picks?
Dick's Picks.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I don't know anything about the Dead other than I can't stand
it. You watch the documentary about
it's
them.
A good documentary, though.
Long Strange Trip?
Yeah, Long Strange Trip is very good. Anyways, I drank a bunch of acid juice.
Wait, is that the Bob Weir thing?
No, that's a Strange Trip.
Okay.
This was called A Long Strange Trip.
Okay.
Yeah, two different documentaries.
Four-parter?
Six-parter. It's really good. It's really well done. I think it's Scorsese's people that did it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. Okay. You can watch it now. Yeah. But anywho.
Speaking of cassette production quality, did you guys understand what they were saying about the early tapes? Was he playing the music on a backing
track. Was he multi-tracking?
Was he doing everything like, I have a tape deck here and I have a microphone here. I'm just going to do layers like that.
Yeah, I think it's just
that's how he did it.
I think it's bouncing back and forth.
Yeah, it's not a four track. He didn't have a four track.
Probably like
just two stereo.
Two jam boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then he would like sing the entire album again. So people have different versions of those tapes.
Yes.
They kind of refer to that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused about how that works.
Well, he couldn't
It'd be like a different karaoke version.
No, that's interesting. It's almost like bootlegging yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like each of those is technically a different performance.
Right.
Yeah.
But the same
first
song.
Album.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like the backing tracks are the same.
Yeah, he would be like, you want my tape? Them. And people were like, sure. And he'd go home and make them a tape.
Yeah.
And then, because he couldn't duplicate.
Yeah.
Right. He didn't have a duper. So those are all like individual performances.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
He's a hard worker.
That really is actually like.
It's all like really.
Think about that for a second.
It's impressive. Like everything he's doing to a certain point. Even, I guess, the like beating a guy in the head with a pipe is, I don't know. I wouldn't say impressive.
I forgot about the pipe part too.
I booped him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at the very, very least, he is a violent person.
Yeah, that does. He chases someone out of the window.
Yeah.
Even though he can't remember exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And that's after recording with Jad and David Fair.
Yeah. Because then he goes to New York. He goes back into the mental institution.
The New York thing is real interesting.
They get him
too,
back out of the
Sonic
mental institution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he goes to New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They bring him to New York because he seems like he's doing better.
Right.
And
but he goes off his meds.
He gets off his meds. Yeah. And then he goes a little nuts.
Okay. One thing that was kind of strange, they just found him in a parking lot.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's on
in
tape.
Jersey
and on tape.
Yeah, yeah. And they have
It's like it's really crazy.
And that's Steve Shelley and I guess Lee Ronaldo.
Yeah,
or Stephen Thurston.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe the voice on the tape, they're just like, and he's like, "I'm gonna stay. I need to be famous. The devil, you know.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
that stuff."
Well, he's like, "My parents will send me back to a mental institution."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's my West Virginia accent.
He was quite busy during this time writing me audio letters with all sorts of instructions.
Earth to Jeff. Tartikoff, 10-4, come 3. This is a message from Daniel Dale Johnston. Here with a few ideas I'd like to do. First of all, I wish that the Beatles would reunite and back me up as a band.
He continued to want me to get in touch with people like Yoko Ono, but he also had some additional ideas. He wanted to be a spokesperson for Mountain Dew.
This is Daniel Johnston speaking from a mental hospital. They tell me I'm crazy here because I love the Mountain Dew so much. I can't get enough of the Mountain Dew. I was sinking deep in sin, far from Mountain Dew. I had problems out within, nothing that I could do. But the Mountain Dew came to me, and I drank it all up. Now I'm happy as can be, oh Mountain Dew. We drink Mountain Dew, we drink Mountain Dew. We have nothing better to do but drink Mountain Dew. We drink Mountain Dew. We drink Mountain Dew. No thing better to do than to drink Mountain Dew.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
There's a lot, crazy people almost always talk about the devil, it seems.
That is
true. A lot of Satan, devil, a lot of concern about it.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about that guy who decapitated that guy in the Greyhound in Canada.
Oh.
Like maybe like 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Oh, man.
I can't remember that.
Oh,
was he saying something about
story.
The devil?
He did not say something about the devil, but just like Daniel on the bus and then just getting off at the wrong bus.
Right.
Like, this guy was like super sleep deprived, and we don't really understand the motive. It's just in the news because he got out of prison recently and changed his name. But yeah, there's, yeah, I was just like, yeah, a lot of bad stuff happens on Greyhound.
Yeah, that like is true.
There's like a bunch of dudes that are just not medicated rolling around in there.
So yeah. Well, then, yeah, and then he goes to New York and freaks out and it seems like he's about to have... It's always like, and someone mentions this, like whenever something about really good's about to happen,
he
I think gets excited and probably he's like, I don't want to take my meds because it makes me drugged up.
Yeah, leveling out.
He's
Or he can't experience he can't experience it in a way that's as intense as he'd like.
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. Also, there might be a component of self-sabotage in there.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about the fact that, like, the self-sabotage thing actually is based around fear of rejection?
Sure.
So I wonder if that's a concern, because he doesn't seem like he cares if
Yeah, like, he's in love with a married woman, like, for years, too. That's another part where you do that.
So he's like, the chase. He likes the chase more than going after someone that he knows he can get. And that's a fear of rejection thing. It's like, I know I can't get you. That's why I'm going to be obsessed about
Interesting.
You.
Yeah,
because I can't get you. Yeah, and then any time he can say, you've rejected me, is what he's after.
Right,
he wants to prove that he's always been rejected anyways. You know? So that fucking goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. It's almost, it's like a weird... inverse hedging your bets kind of thing.
The fact that people love him despite all his behavior must be very confusing to him.
No, but he probably loves
it. No, it's comforting.
It's almost like it's comforting. I'm going to challenge you to like
me. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's comforting because he doesn't understand. Obviously, he probably had emotional problems as a kid and he didn't understand how to deal with his own emotions. So that kind of works in that. Mm-hmm. But so then they show him in New York City. He takes a tour of the Statue of Liberty with Jad Fair, which, by the way, I would pay hundreds of dollars to tour Statue of Liberty with Jad Fair.
I wish that was a podcast.
Yeah. And draws the Christian fish
up and down.
And
the
they have the recording of the police officer. Like, what does he care?
That's the thing.
Do you think it's reenactment?
How much? I don't know. No.
I don't think No. Because he's like, what the fuck you doing?
It's not a reenactment.
You got the you fucking drawing fish.
We should just reenact it right now.
Okay.
But I'm.
you do Daniel Johnson over the cop.
I would just end I'm up a trying seagull. To do Michael Cera.
But I'm just trying to. Don't play cards with the devil.
He could totally do it. Yeah. I just realized that there's the super bad thing. Is it super bad?
Oh, yeah.
We have to sing the Guess Who for all those dudes on coke.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen that one.
That was just, that was his tryout.
But so it's like, they were like, okay, so he does the shit with the Statue of Liberty. Mm-hmm. He gets caught. The police yell at him. They say, you have to come back. You have to pay a fine. You have to get rid of them all. Then he goes crazy. He goes off his meds. They find him in New Jersey somehow. Then he's in Bellevue. He escapes the mental hospital and then opens for fire hose at CBGB's.
Right. Yeah, he's just wandering New York.
How long after Bellevue?
I think... a week? I don't know. They don't really say, but they say it in this montage style, and it's really fast. And then he opens for Firehose at CBGB.
Yeah.
it's like 2-3 songs at CBGB.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some narrative that I know of where it's just like this person who's always just kind of stumbling into the Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Indie rock Forrest Gump.
Or Zelig, I guess, is the other one.
There's people Woody always Allen. Fall into success.
Yeah, shit happens.
The Peters Principle. Gump. Yeah.
Started a shrimp company.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bubba.
What else?
I married Ivanka Trump, and
people fall into success all the time, and it's always the hard workers. Wait,
did I say Forrest Trump?
I love you.
Hashtag Forrest Trump.
That's sad.
A Kip Yulhorn exclusive.
Intellectual property.
How much did you guys love Firehose, though?
Oh yeah, I never got to see him live.
I've never heard Firehose.
Really?
No. You're a Minuteman guy, though.
Yeah.
You're not really... Okay, yeah.
No, I do. Yeah, I like the Minutemen a lot.
Yeah, no,
Iffin is one of my favorite albums.
I mean, that's like sort of like you took the rhythm section of Minutemen and then like a guy who sounds like Don McLean or something. like a really kind of croony guy.
He's a little croony, I guess.
Like Gordon Lightfoot with the Minutemen.
I love Dean Boone. I mean, like, I love Minutemen. I love Firehose, but like, I think that's... I don't know. I love those guys.
Yeah.
And I think that's great that he got to open for them at CBG.
What's your favorite Firehose record?
Iffin.
That's the entry.
Yes, the entryway? And then Double Nickel on the Needle.
On the Dime?
Oh, that's the Minutemen, yeah.
Yeah, that's a minute. That's like my favorite Minutemen album.
Yeah.
Which Brave Captain, is that Brave on Iffin? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should hear. You should, we could
Brave Captain is probably my favorite song of theirs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I love it.
It's like kind of the MTV hit.
Yeah. Did you guys ever go to CBGB's before it closed?
Yeah.
Did you play there?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Awesome.
CMJ, actually.
Oh, for CMJ.
I went there. I'd never played there, but I think I stepped foot in there, I think, at some point, yeah.
I went to see High on Fire there one time, and I got dread whipped.
Oh, yeah.
And I was behind a dreadlocked dude.
Might have been Billy Anderson, possibly.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But I think I was upset about it enough that I was like, nah.
Oh, wow.
Gotta get out of here.
I can't get dread whipped.
Yeah, what year are we talking about?
Maybe 2002.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what time? When did it shut?
The Panthers? Oh, wait. When did? Yeah.
No, I'm saying I was just hanging out there watching High on Fire. Yeah. But Panthers played there probably 2004 or something like that. I don't know when that place closed. Like 2006?
Yeah, probably.
They moved it to Vegas.
Yeah. Ugh. And then there was this like CBGB's cafe.
Yeah.
Next door, the cantina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing was cool.
That place was cool. So I was there. I went to CMJ in 95.
Okay.
And I saw Medeski, Martin, and Wood in the cantina.
Okay.
And then I saw the Dirty Three open up for Flaming Lips at CBGB's that night.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It was a very New York experience for me.
I wonder if... This in my mind, Medeski, Martin, and Wood sounds exactly like the String Cheese Incident. Is that true?
No.
They're okay. They're much more better. Soundtracky.
They're jazz, jammy.
Jammy, though.
They're a little jammy, but it's very jazz.
You have a cluster of bands that in your head kind of sound the same?
Sure.
Right, just based on marketing.
I couldn't tell your leftover salmon from your String Cheese.
It all
makes me hungry. What's that?
Jars of Clay.
Oh, that's a Christian one.
Yeah. I thought that leftover salmon was.
Christian?
That must be.
Well, they're...
It sounds like a Christian band name.
No, I think they're just jammy. Like Mo, you remember Mo with the period?
I've seen that, yeah.
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 Or Umphrey's McGee. That's one that I always think of.
Right. Or anything that has Uncle in it.
Yeah.
Except for Uncle Tupelo.
What is the Irish punk?
Dropkick Murphys?
Yeah. I get Umphrey's McGee confused with that for some reason.
Those guys always get into fights on the stage.
People could be saying this about our bands, too.
That's funny. Like, it's
completely like... Yeah.
I don't know what someone would say about my band. It's just George standing there with the box.
If I told you your band sounded... I just kind of assumed that George's music probably sounded like Skid Row or White Lion, something like that. Would you be fine with that?
ICP, maybe.
White Lion? I don't even know that one.
Okay. When the Children Cry?
I've had very weird things thrown at my bands that were I found out about good bands by things people said about my bands.
Yeah.
I'm like, I never listened to that. Like, you seem like you were directly influenced by that.
Yeah. Aquarius Records is good for that.
Yeah.
Or where,
Apparently
there's a documentary being made about that.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, I do know about that. Kenneth Thomas, who now lives in LA.
Wendy.
Doing that. Yeah. Yeah, Wendy, yeah. Yeah. Who also, worked at Apple for a long time.
Yeah. So then, back to the doc.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see, so Jad Fair brings Daniel Johnston to his house in Maryland. They do My Dinner with Daniel.
Right.
A remake of My Dinner with Andre. Then Daniel Johnston takes over. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about how he's dressed in white. And, obviously he's... does this Christian thing. And then he goes, I think, just full-blown.
That's when he has an encounter with the lady who jumps out the window.
Yeah, he goes, gets back, and they put him back on the
Maryland,
bus.
Maryland, or it's West Virginia at that point.
He's going back to West Virginia. Yeah, they're in Maryland, and they're basically like, we can't deal with this guy. We're going to put him back on the bus, get him home. He gets off the bus two stops too early, doesn't know where he is, goes to this apartment lady who jumps out of a window, and then they put him in. That's when they fully institutionalize him, which is what needs to happen, obviously.
How long did that last for? I couldn't keep track, honestly.
A lot of in and out. Yeah,
they don't really say, but then he goes back and lives with his family, and then they move to Texas.
Right.
Yeah, and then we cut to basically modern day, which is 2005.
Yeah.
And we see... Danny and the Nightmares. Yeah, and they
say about that.
And
it's an odd situation.
Yeah, and one of my favorite moments though is when he's like, "We're driving down the road."
Yeah,
I say to my wife, "Hey, that guy looks like Daniel Johnston." She's like, "Uh-uh," and he's being attacked by dogs. So even though we weren't sure, we still get out, and she kicks one of the dogs in the head.
That's right. Yeah,
and then we find out it's Daniel Johnston.
And animal was abused in the making of this film.
There's a lot of stories in
there. I buy everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't know if Danny and the Nightmares is still an active thing, but I remember actually when I worked at the label, maybe this, I don't know if this is like something I don't know if people are allowed to talk about rejected demos from sure. labels. This wasn't a rejected demo, but it was
when
someone...
When I worked at Troubleman, Mike wanted to put out a comp of like worst demos ever, which would have been the best idea.
That's awesome.
Possible. Yeah. Mike. Sorry.
Go yeah, on. No. So I worked at a label. Someone in Danny and the Nightmare sent us like a new record like they wanted to work with. And I remember talking to Jello about it. He's like, I don't know if I want to work with him because I met him once and he said I was the devil and ran out of the room. So that was like,
impression.
Yeah. So like, I'm like, I did put out I think they put out a record in 2012. It seems like a good situation for him, honestly. Like it's one social thing he gets to do when he's like, he seems like all he wants to do is like hang out at home, like eat mac and cheese or whatever, and just draw.
Just be really unhealthy and make art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a recent. Oh, I don't know. We were going through the chronology of this, but there was something that came out in 2015 that was not a documentary, but it was like Daniel and his recordings he did when he was younger, sort of like in conversation with each other, and it's like produced by like Lana Del Rey, and there's this guy who plays like young Daniel. And then I was noticing that, like, he, I don't know, it seems like he's, like, missing his teeth, which I don't know exactly what happens. But that also reminded me of Crumb.
Oh,
Charles Crumb's, like, missing his top
teeth. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just this weird, it's not meth, but maybe it's just grinding. Like, maybe manic depression makes you grind your teeth out. Hygiene. I also was thinking about Wesley Willis, speaking of, like, where
it's
used to
work. I was actually, that occurred to me earlier, too.
I mean, they kind of have some parallels.
Yeah. I don't think Wesley Willis was the songwriter that.
Right. I mean, I guess he always had the same beat for everything in the same type. But the visual art aspect, like, they kind of occupy a similar range. Like, you know, Wesley's visual art was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually can't remember seeing Wesley Willis's visual art.
I can't either.
It's on all his album covers and stuff. When I worked in the office, we actually had, like, a giant, like, 4 or 5 foot Wesley Willis drawing up in my office.
And
I'm like, at some point I'm like, this needs to be behind like plastic or in a frame or something.
Yeah.
This can't just be sitting in my office.
I had friends that used to play with him.
Oh,
in
Chicago.
Yeah,
Chicago bands. Yeah.
And then let's talk about Daniel's visual art, because that is the one component that they get into in this doc that they don't spend a whole lot of time on, but it seems pretty cool. I mean, like, he has some art, you know, in galleries. As a 5-year-old. That's the 5-year-old thing.
So, we're talking about the segueing out of Wesley Willis, like, as an artist, and we're talking about how the movie sort of focuses on one. There's so many things to talk about.
I know.
But there's his visual art I've always loved.
Yeah.
I always loved his visual art.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about it. I don't like Keith Haring. I'm not sure I like Wesley Willis. Or,
Daniel.
Daniel John. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I would buy, but I would go look at it if there's a... I mean, isn't it L.A.? They have an art gallery in L.A.
It's La Brea, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. That gallery, 01 gallery.
And it seems like maybe he's made some money from his art, because I think it sells.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Like we were saying, Tarkovsky was, like, they're not talking. He's still buying it from, like, the comic book store.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So it must be worth something, yeah.
He's definitely, like, his main influences seem to be, like, early Marvel comics. Like, I just watched the thing, there was an interview with him in Nardwar, and Nardwar's just, like, handing him comic books.
I would like to watch that, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He does a song in it. He's got a different band. He's got, like, a friend of his from college playing guitar with him.
Okay.
He's a pretty good guitarist. They're in a comic book store. It's, I think, maybe 2012, and it's, like, there's really, like, 7 people in there in Vancouver. Which is like, that's crazy.
Have you heard the Lana Del Rey cover of
that is in that video I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
That video, it's called, I think it's called Hi, How Are You? It's on YouTube. It's just like Lana Del Rey produced this weird, I guess it shows like Daniel at home now, what he's looking like now these days.
Well, so she's a fan.
It seems to be. Okay. I mean, she's got the money to throw into
that's cool
project.
That she actually, it's... You know, someone wasn't just like suggesting things for her to record. Mm-hmm.
Seems that way.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pitch this to a friend, which is sometimes how we like to frame talking about these, what are the ways?
Just say hello and then say hey. Say hey, Jen.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi. Go watch.
How's Moana?
Yeah, if you were to pitch this doc to a friend, just like a sentence, like you should watch Devil and Daniel Johnston because of why.
Why do you think? Seems like he wanted to say something.
That's a very expensive microphone.
Oh, he is careerist, definitely.
He's eating the mic.
God, you guys have the hardest questions.
Pretty hard. You're in the hot seat.
Welcome to...
I would mostly just say, hey, you should watch this.
Because it's good?
I don't ever go for the oversell.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, you know. Would you... Okay, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Would you recommend this to somebody who didn't know his music?
Yes.
You would?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just such a well-made documentary. I would recommend it to any documentary fan, any music fan.
Yeah.
Because it's just so well-made. It's literally in my top 10 documentaries. I think I watch it once a year because I love it so
much.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. I think now I would like to show this to even my mom or something.
Yeah, sure.
Just to be like, okay, so this is a whole world that exists.
It's bittersweet. Yeah. And it's underground music and it's a time and a place like the 90s and how that stuff actually happened, how someone underground could just kind of stumble into a showing and become pretty much world famous, you know. Yeah,
true.
So, yeah,
I'm just hoping that he's doing good these days. That's what I was trying to find out. I was like asking around on Facebook because I know a lot of people that have degrees of separation from him, but we hope you're doing good.
Yes,
if you're listening, Daniel,
Jeff, Daniel, if you're listening, can you say you're listening to Sup Doc?
Yeah, come here. come here. I'm gonna tell you what to say now that
you got the mic.
Now that you photobombed,
you're gonna be in. Yeah, you're gonna be in the doc. They're microphones.
All right, but here, check this out.
They record the voices.
Can you say he's gonna tell you exactly what to say, and you say it into the microphone. Okay?
Can you say hi?
Hi.
You're listening to Sup Doc.
I don't know.
All right, say here.
You're listening to.
Say hi. You're listening to Sup Doc. It's just like Sup Dog, but Sup Doc. Say it. You wanted to do so bad.
That's how most of our listeners feel.
Hi, you're listening to.
So this is your last chance to do it. Are you gonna? Say hi. You're listening to Sup Doc.
Hi, I'm listening to Sup Doc.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And what's your son's name? We didn't.
Jack.
Jack. Thank you, Jack.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Kip, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kip.
This is great.
Yeah. Thanks for doing it. Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of Sup Doc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about Sup Doc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
Sup Doc is produced by Will Scoville.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.